That's called Mellow, using my FM voice. And by the way, you can listen to WGN on the FM if you're listening in the metro area of Chicago. 87.7 will be there for just a few more weeks. Kind of fun to hear how we sound. Everybody says I sound so dramatically differently when they listen on FM as opposed to AM. But it's still me. We have a $25 Lou Malnati's gift certificate to give away later in this hour, and I will tell you what you need to do and know to win, and I'll do that shortly. All right, divorce. Boy, it can be a nasty biz. What you want is an amicable separation, but I would bet that mostly that doesn't happen. You're divorced because the relationship has broken down. That usually means there's a lot of tension, if not just out-and-out seething rage between the parties, and there's always something to fight over: the sofa, the kids, and in growing numbers, the family pet. Jim Allen is a founding partner of the matrimonial law firm Layden & Allen here in Chicago. Howdy.
Hi, good to see you.
I told you to come with great stories, and you said you did. You have them. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us. I'd rather you call, though, because sometimes there's a bit of a narrative to what you want to say. It's a real pain to read that on these little bubbles that keep moving on the screen. So call us at 312-981-7200. If you were involved in or know about a divorce where the attorneys were called in to win custody of Fido or Fluffikins. So how bad, how contentious, how expensive can it get?
It can get very expensive, Bill, because for many people, the pet is another child or sometimes the only child in a family. So they will spare no expense over that battle.
All right. Give us a story.
Well, there are many, many stories. One that comes to mind, and I got the client's permission to use it, and I'm changing the nature of the animal to protect the privacy of the animal.
From a long hair to a short hair. Okay.
But there's a case really involving lovebirds. And so the situation was that both people in the couple really, really felt attached to the birds. The one person's claim was that the birds were necessary for the business and their location had to be kept at a retail establishment where they were in a cage and people would come in, et cetera, et cetera. And the other person who cared for the birds said, no, these birds belong at home. They were actually being neglected, blah, blah, blah. So there was quite a battle pull back and forth.
And don't tell me they split the birds.
They did not. You know what? I think even divorcing people don't want to split up lovebirds. So there's still some romance left. And so they didn't split up the birds, and the birds ended up at home with the person. And this is kind of the rule of the cases. The person who was mostly taking care of the pet, who was most involved, is more likely to end up with custody of that pet. But they're heart-wrenching stories because animals in the law are just property. To people, there are people.
So the judge is looking at the animal as he or she might a couch.
You know what? That's really kind of what the law characterizes them as, is personal property. And yet we all know friends who have spent fortunes and much time and attention on a beloved pet. So, you know, it's easy to sort of take it lightly, and the stories are sometimes, you know, amusing, but by the same token, it just goes to people's hearts.
So the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers says that the number of pet custody cases is increasing. Are you seeing that?
I'm absolutely seeing it. And I think part of that is that if you look at our culture, I think the emphasis on pets, organic food for pets, pet hospitals,
spas,
clothing lines. I mean, if you look at what we're spending on pets, it's not surprising that it translates to divorce cases. It's really not. It's what people are investing in. It's what they're investing their time and attention in.
And it's also interesting how much people value the pets. And sometimes that comes out in the negotiations. Here's Jason who's calling in. Jason, tell us about your brother-in-law.
Oh, no, my sister and brother-in-law, they actually got divorced. It was nasty. It was terrible. But at the very end, after about a six-month battle, he gave up ownership or half ownership of their, you know, early 2000s Mercedes Benz for the dog. And so she took the car. He took the dog.
Yeah,
that's not uncommon. People will give up tangible, valuable assets in order to get the pet. I mean, it's one way of negotiating. Obviously, is I'll give you something you want, and if it's more money. But sometimes money can't buy the pet because they're both so invested.
Yeah. So is the dog still around, Jason?
the dog is still around, and they're actually getting back together.
So Carr and Pooch will all be part of the same family yet again. Isn't that funny? Jason, I'm glad you called.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. So it's mostly about dogs, I'm guessing.
I think dogs are number one. Cats come in number two. I've had a couple of horses. And horses are very, very expensive, so I've always been interested in that battle. And all pets are expensive as well. So it becomes a factor even in what budget someone needs to live on if they're going to have the pet with them. Because, you know, the average per month now is about $500 a month for a pet.
Yeah, our three cats, we are going to downsize when one of them decides to leave this earth. It's just insane what we're spending. Their teeth need to be clean, even though we're brushing all the time.
Are they in good health?
Relatively. I mean, one of them is 15 years old. My wife just called. We've got to buy this darn finicky cat whole food, exotic cat food, because he turns his nose up at everything else. It's just, gosh.
But it's really a cost factor.
Yeah, my sidetrack here. My point is, if he only has one option and it's Friskies, at some point he's going to eat the Friskies.
It's like a child with oatmeal, right? Eventually they'll go there.
Yeah, but you know, you got to compromise on a lot of things. So it's not like deciding who gets the coffee table. What do you counsel a client who really seems adamant to wanting to keep the animal? Do you have to determine whether or not the court is going to see it favorably to your client?
We do. And I think you have to sort of set it up the way you would any other kind of custody fight, which is, you know, how invested were you? What are you showing in terms of evidence in your day-to-day behavior that you really care? I'll tell you an interesting thing, and when your caller talked about getting back together, we've had some pet sharing cases. That's very interesting. Shared custody after the divorce, where
dog has to move between the parties like a child?
Well, there are all kinds of variations, but one of them is I'll walk it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and you're Thursday and Saturday, and Sunday, you know, we'll both take a turn.
So the court decides where the dog will live, but they'll share the walking.
Well, that was more of a personal decision in a negotiation. Most of the custody cases for pets eventually get settled. Very rarely does a court have to go all the way, and a court, you know, even if you're in for a pretrial, will say, guys, let me tell you how I see it before you spend a lot of time and money on the trial. And in one case, the judge actually turned to me, and there was a fight over a dog, and said, you know what, your client wants the divorce. Your client is moving on emotionally. The other client seems more broken by the divorce and maybe needs the dog more for comfort.
Now,
so
I would agree with that.
Did you agreed.
See favorably that
we did. Yeah. I explained it to my client, and you know, my client was still very, very sad, but had moved on to a different life. And so, therefore, maybe the pet was comfort for the person left behind. I thought it was a very equitable approach of the judge.
Peter, tell us about your friend and the cats.
Okay, my friend had a boy cat and a girl cat. They're Maine Coon cats. They're like Viking cats, like from Norway.
Yeah, I've got three of them. I love them.
Well, they're long-haired. They're very large. And he let them out the door while his ex-wife was at work when they were arguing with the lawyers and let them run free. They weren't fixed, so they became like feral strays.
That was cruel. Did she get back at him somehow?
Well, the lawyers were all angry, and she was all angry. It wasn't cruel because the cats can handle the outdoors and the climate and all that.
I wonder. A cat that's raised as a house pet isn't going to be all that able to fend for itself. I'll tell you, one of my Maine Coons disappeared for 3.5 weeks. We found him in the crawl space of a home blocks away, emaciated. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he wasn't.
These cats are great mousers and would chase, like, squirrels and kill squirrels and stuff in the fenced-off backyard. So he just let the cats run wild. He wouldn't surrender the...
Not the kind of guy I would ever think I'd like to be married to, if he has that predilection to seek vengeance against another partner. All right, Peter, I'm glad you called, though. Thanks.
Happy holidays. Go Packers!
Yeah, right. 312-981-7200 if you want to talk about anything but the Packers. We're talking specifically about pets and the lengths people go to keep them in the fold when there is a divorce afoot. So 312-981-7200. To talk or text at that same number. I'm Bill Mahler, back with more calls and conversation with Gemma Allen in a second. Because I'm happy. Clap along and give you I started the show with Joy Spring from Clifford Brown. Here is Pharrell doing Happy. It's just because I'm in a good mood today. The sun is out. Isn't it about time? You know, when it's away, you don't realize how good it feels. And yet, Gemma Allen, you moved from, I told you to, I guess, from the sunny side of the Allstate Showcase studio to the dark side.
Just the better to see you. The
view is better
from here, but I do love the sun.
So we're talking about divorce where pets are involved. 312-981-7200, if you've got a story to share about that. And you said you had another story to share about.
You know what? There are some sad aspects of it. When there are children involved, the pet is often very meaningful to the children. And so kind of a rule of thumb would be that the pet should go where the children are. But I had one really awful case where one spouse kidnapped the pet out of the yard, but never said to his lawyers or to the children or to his soon-to-be former spouse that that's what he had done. So until the next visitation, which was a week later, the children really thought the dog had been taken. The police were involved. It was this horrible thing. And then, of course...
So this was your client?
It was... No, it was... I represented the person who had custody of the children and at that moment, physical possession of the dog. But the husband had taken the dog thinking that that would endear him to the children.
What a knucklehead.
Uh-huh.
What did the court do?
Uh-huh. The dog came back and we won custody. But it was such a misperception. But in his mind, it was sort of like, you know, a seduction for the kids would be that the pet was there. But the way he set it up was poisonous.
You must see a lot of nasty business
in
matrimonial law.
It brings
out the worst in us sometimes.
Well, there are moments. I mean, I will get letters from clients a year later saying, thank you for seeing me through it. I don't know who I was during that period because I don't recognize some of the things I did as being truly me. And you're right. It's because, Bill, it brings out the worst in people. It's the death of a dream, and they're absolutely torn apart by that death.
It's not just the dream leaving. You just so resent the other person sometimes.
It's the blame game. And it's the blame game because no one wants to look in the mirror and say, what did I do to contribute to the end of this marriage?
And it almost has to be a fact that both parties were contributing to it. Now, obviously not in every instance, but I would gather that in most, it's not only one bad person.
Well, I think it's interaction. And I think there's a 10% where there's a really, really bad actor or actress. I'm not going to, you know, it's one person or the other is really intolerable. But the majority of cases are transactional and people just ran out of gas.
Do you think the courts or the law needs to change to accommodate this growing number of pets that are coming up before the bench?
I think the law is sort of, it doesn't have to formally change, but I think we've all adjusted. There's more mediation over pet issues. There's more instructions to clients about these are the rules of the road. We talk about, you know, there's some pets that you came into the marriage with. You can rely on the fact you're probably going to take that pet out with you. It's a premarital pet. So there's some things we're now able to share with clients that are guidelines that we wouldn't have thought of 5 years ago.
Do you work it out sometimes with the other attorney?
We do. We do a lot of, most cases settle. 90% of the cases settle after a little bit of angst or a lot of angst, depending on the case. So over the pets, we talk about the history of the pet care. We talk about who's, you know, if someone's going to have the children, they need that pet more. We talk about the possibility.
And sometimes you go back to your client and say, I think the case is going to be very effectively made on the other side, that they are the primary caregiver to this animal. And for that reason alone, you may not win.
You know what, Bill, you're right. And I do that. You can't just be a cheerleader for your client. You have to be an explainer of the likely outcomes and be willing to bear the heat for the fact they may lose.
But do you have clients that say, I don't care? I want that dog back, and we're going to go to the mat to win.
You always have those clients, and they say, I don't care. I don't care what amount of money is spent. I don't care what has to be done, because in that case, they're so emotionally attached that they've lost objectivity. And sometimes you cannot say rational things to irrational people.
Do you find it difficult to carry forth with your arguments in front of the court in an instance like that where your heart really isn't in it?
You know what? When you're an advocate, you have to make your client's position your own.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to effectively
advocate.
So
it's a mental adjustment you make.
It's a mental adjustment. And you know what? There's always some redeeming social value on each side of an argument. There are things that you can feel that perhaps your client needs that pet more or your client is less mentally stable and therefore needs to rely on that pet more. I mean, they're not wonderful arguments, but you make them.
Yeah. You know, with a child, there's emancipation. That is usually when they're 18, then it's out of the hands of the court. But an animal, if it's very young, could go on for a long time.
Absolutely. There's no emancipation age. And the other thing is, what I'm always amazed at is pets are sometimes such a financial liability, and people don't seem to care. They are costly because they're ill. I'm now talking about an old dog. Or a dog that's in chemo. I've had several cases of dogs in chemo, and that's a very expensive proposition, and yet people are still fighting over the end time care of that pet. Yeah.
I should have called Steve Dale. He used to be a regular on the program. He's our pet guy. I mean, I know he would have some interesting input to make. But in a way, Gemma Allen, I think it's almost a testament to, even though it's the ugly side of love, it is still love.
Right.
The
it's
attraction,
attachment.
You know, that we have to
nurture
beings that are somewhat vulnerable in this world, and we're there to give them protection and love, and
I
they
agree.
Reciprocate to such a degree that we develop these attachments.
I agree. And they are very comforting. And people going through a divorce need comfort. You know, and it's mortal sin to suggest that maybe they buy a new pet, but actually there is that option for the other person that they could start over. I mean, it's not ideal, but it is a potential solution. So it's not the end. With a child, you're not going to be able to buy a new child. But with a pet, you could conceivably, you know, replace that. Although, God forbid you say that to a client in the heat of battle, because they don't want to hear it.
Yeah, they don't want to hear that, even though I think intellectually they understand that that's the absolute fact.
Right.
Because they've probably done it many times in their life already.
Exactly. Even as a couple, they've probably done it. You know, when a pet got sick or when a pet had to be put down, which is very, very hard. But I've had lawyers tell me, and I know myself, when you have to let a pet go, just in the normal course of events, not a divorce, it's really gut-wrenching and heart-wrenching. Yeah. So, and divorce just makes it more so.
Let me ask you a little inside dope here. Now, if you are representing a client that you think is unreasonable in this pet issue, do you ever go to the other clients and admit that and just say, I'm still going to have to fight you on this, but, you know, I know I'm not going to win?
You know what? I try and stay very, very loyal. It's just what I do. But I will go to the other attorney and say, I recognize that my side of the case may not be as strong as yours, but I'm going to make this battle because I'm advocating for a client whom
I
believe in.
Sure, and you want the attorney to tell his or her client that, you know, this is going to be a long drag out possibly.
And that's the other option.
And they could give it up.
That helps negotiations when they know you're firm in your resolve. So I try to stay firm in my resolve no matter what. You are representing a person, and if that's what's important to that client, so be it.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask you a cost, but is there a percentage you could put on if somebody wants to go fight for a pet and it takes, I don't know, a few extra days of court, that could add up a pretty hefty bill.
It can really. I've seen stories. I have not had this story because I really do try to keep it within the realm of reason. But I have had full tilt custody battles told to me over just a pet that were in excess of $100,000.
Oh,
but those are just stories.
Sakes.
Those are stories. I wasn't in it.
Let me get $100,000 just for the pet part of the.
Because you have two lawyers. You may, in fact, have an expert. You have days of testimony about
an expert witness.
Right. When we got this pet, whatever, whatever. Or this pet would thrive better with this person. I mean, it's amazing. And, of course, court time is just expensive because lawyers are expensive and billing on an hourly basis. So if you stretch it out, you stretch it out across the board. But I want to be clear, that was not my case. I really try to keep it
under $50,000.
Yeah. I try. A discounted rate. No, seriously, I think there should be a limit. But again, the client drives the solutions.
Hard to limit the heart.
It is. Good. Well put.
Gemma Allen, she is with the matrimonial law firm Layden & Allen here in Chicago. Not too many blocks away, right?
Correct. We're just down on Michigan Avenue at 150 North.
Good to see you.
Good to see you as always, Bill.